Fear is a frightening thing. It can paralyze us. It can motivate us. It can destroy us. I suppose, in a sense, fear must be counted as the strongest and most avoided of emotions. But there's a plentiful supply of fear these days. Corporate fear over war or over economic reverses and recession. Private fear over illness or death or unemployment. For some, it's silly things. At least that's the way others would say it. For some, it is a fear, even a fear itself. The truth of it is that there's not a single one of us who are here tonight who has not experienced fear, even long after we've forgotten the cause and don't remember the date. Just the mention of it can bring back all the feelings. The sense of a heart beating fast, or the sweaty palms, or the tense muscles, or the panic on the inside. That realization that things are beyond our control, that no matter how much energy or money or any other resource we have, that we cannot make everything in life be the way we would choose for it to be. We've experienced it as adults, or we've experienced it as children. Perhaps the earliest memories of being frightened as a child in the dark of the night. Or perhaps as a patient in the doctor's office or in the hospital bed. Or maybe as the victim of some ruthless criminal. Or maybe it's in the wake of our own failures that kind of heap up on us until our dreams are shattered. Although we would not pretend to understand her language or her time, or even fully her story, with one thing about Mary we can identify, and that is her fear. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings to you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." And Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. In simplest of words, Mary was afraid. Afraid, and I think rightly so, for I too, like you, would be afraid if unexpectedly approached by an angel who appeared out of nowhere and gave some sort of extraterrestrial divine greeting, something that I did not fully understand. Because always there's a fear that goes with that which is a surprise, which is unexpected, unanticipated, unknown. And the truth of it is that few of us respond very well to that. Most of us kind of step back, and we are rather defensive until we can size things up, until we can think that we can figure things out. And so for Mary, to be sure, seeing and hearing that angel so unexpectedly was for her a frightening experience. But let me guess that there was much more to Mary's fear than just being caught by surprise. I perceive her as someone who was bright and quick. And she did what sometimes we have done, where in an instant we think through things that normally would take us a very long time. And while it may at first be superficial, there's something of an analysis in that split second that brings together all of the issues and lays them out before us. She was a teenage girl who quickly processed the multiple fears that she faced. For certainly, it was for her a recognition at that moment that while perhaps by God's standards something wondrous was happening for her, it was also the threat of having all her dreams shattered. For she, like other young Hebrew girls of her day, had grown up with the expectation, the anticipation that she would be a wife and a mother. And so she had played house, and she had imagined what her wedding would be like, what her husband would look like, where their home would be in their community, and what she might name her children. From earliest childhood, she had dreamed the dreams of other Hebrew young girls like her. And at that moment, she feared that all of her dreams, like a piece of glass shattering, were falling in broken pieces around her. And she did not have the power to control nor to change the circumstances which were being imposed upon her. She feared that her dreams were shattered. But that, of course, was not all. For in that brief moment, she also feared that her reputation was ruined. Virginity was counted as a young woman's greatest virtue. Sexual union and pregnancy outside of marriage could forever ruin a girl's reputation. In those days, it might even have meant that she would be executed, capital punishment, by stoning for such immorality. And perhaps, if she had long enough to think of it, she might have chosen that as the lesser of the consequences. For she must have wondered what other people would think, her family and her friends, those who would stare her way and think their private thoughts or whisper their words behind her back. That she might spend the rest of her life being propositioned by men who were looking for someone who could be accessed as sexually easy. Someone who could be propositioned with a probable positive response. She must have wondered about the shame that would come upon her parents and how they would deal with it. Whether they would love her, whether they would forgive her, or whether their hurt and their anger would be something that they could not process, and surely they would never understand why. For who would ever believe a teenage girl who was pregnant and yet insisted on her virginity still? And so she feared that her reputation was ruined. But she also must have feared that her relationships would be broken, for she, like we, had lots of relationships that she counted to be the most valuable of her possessions. Friends of a lifetime, her parents and her family. Not least, of course, Joseph, the man who had asked that she marry him. Important relationships. You know, it's a vulnerable thing to give away your heart, to love somebody else, to really care. If you stand back and stay aloof, you protect yourself, at least in part, from some of those dangers of hurt. But Mary had connected up with those who were in her family and beyond. And all of that could, for that moment and thereafter, be forever lost. She had linked her heart with Joseph, and now she was afraid she would lose him. But perhaps her greatest fear is the fear that sums up all of our fears, and that's the fear of the unknown. All of Mary's troubles come crashing down when this young girl, planning a wedding, embarking on life, ready to be grown up, expecting the best, fearing the worst, has put upon her something she never even thought of. It was never even a consideration that an angel would break into her life with such news, with such an extraordinary experience. She had swirling around in her thoughts 10,000 questions and didn't know which one to reach out and grasp for the few fleeting moments that she had with an angel who might give her something of an answer. No, it was never part of her plan. And she was afraid. She was afraid of what might be. But you know, just as God had carefully chosen Mary from all the women of her day and all the women of history, so God had also carefully chosen an angel named Gabriel. An angel specially prepared for God's extraordinary messenger mission. An angel, at least if the biblical record be complete, that was not called upon often, for he was sent only on God's most important missions, sometimes hundreds or perhaps thousands of years before God beckoned to him. When he came, he was the perfect angel for the job. He sensed her fear when she didn't speak a word. He connected with her heart. He interpreted the expression on her face. He understood her soul. And so, responding to Mary's fears, Gabriel gave his angel's answers. Two of them, in fact. The first of his answers, composed in words of comfort on the outside. He said, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. Wonderful words. Fantastic, powerful words. Sensitive words. But let me ask you, when you are absolutely scared, almost to death, and someone says, "Don't be afraid," does that make you instantly not afraid simply because words have been spoken? Is it possible for words to chase away our fears? In many cases, the answer is yes. Ask a parent whose child has a sudden fever in the night. He puts in a call to a pediatrician and waits what may only be minutes for the call to come back, but seems as if those minutes are an eternity. Or the parents with a stricken child late in the night who wrap the baby up in a blanket and speed through the street to the nearest hospital emergency room, fearing the absolute worst, that the child will be severely damaged or may lose his or her life. And then either over the phone or at the emergency room of the hospital, the doctor says, "Hey, don't be afraid. It's okay. Nothing to worry about." And the pounding heart settles. And the hot, clammy hands cool. And just the words bring comfort and peace. Or maybe up against it in circumstances of employment, knowing that others in the industry are having their jobs taken away from them, they're being laid off because of cutbacks, and worried that perhaps you're going to be next, wondering how you're going to pay the house payments or support your family, or what will you do without health insurance if you have to buy it out on your own, and how would you pay the premium even if you could get the policy you chose? And with all of those anxieties frightening you day after day. And then a word comes from the boss. She or he says, "Hey, we're going to take care of you. Don't worry about it. You're kind of special, and we're going to make sure that you come out okay." And instantly, the fears are chased away by just a word. Oh, it's not as if it were any word, because it depends on who speaks it. Does that person really understand, and does that person have the power and the authority really to make a difference? For if I were the one who were to speak a word of comfort when a child is sick, hardly would parents have their hearts settled. Or if I pretended to be the boss in the company about which I know nothing and told you not to worry about it, not to be afraid, you would discount my words before I finished the first sentence. Words of comfort only count if they come from the right person. But you see, Mary, troubled, frightened, heard words from God, brought to her by the lips of an angel. And those words count. "Mary, do not be afraid," was enough to settle her heart, enough to quiet the most frightened of emotions. "Not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God." Then the angel gave a second answer to words of comfort on the outside. He added the promise of Jesus on the inside. "Mary, you will be with child and give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus." It was, without doubt, one of the most extraordinary promises ever made. It was the promise that something unprecedented and unsuccceeded, something absolutely supernatural would take place. That inside of her would reside God Himself. God, in the person of Jesus, would actually move inside the body of Mary. No longer a distant God in a distant heaven, but a God on the inside, a God who would go with her wherever she went, who would listen in on her thoughts and her words and would provide a comfort and a strength that transcended any circumstance she would ever experience. And eventually, everyone everywhere would be able to see on the outside the difference from God on the inside. And of course, the promise came true. the virgin conceived, and the Son of God Himself lived inside of Mary. The angel's answers for Mary's fears were startling and supernatural, and they were. I think that one reason that we are so fascinated with Christmas is that we too have our fears. I have mine and you have yours. We identify with Mary's troubles, with her wonders, with the fears. Oh, ours may be different. Fears are as different as there are people here tonight, as distinctive as the fingerprints on our hands, as distinct as our names. There's some here tonight who are frightened, really frightened by pain or illness or death. There are others whose hearts just ache over broken relationships, over wayward children, over a pending divorce, over the ongoing grief, the loss of someone you love. The list is long. The list of fears we face. For some, it is infertility. In a world that seems to have an overabundance of new babies and pregnant friends. For some, it is singleness, when it seems like all of one's friends are getting engaged and becoming married. For others, it's an addiction that is like a prison with bars only on the inside, and you can't break out, and it goes with you everywhere you go, and there's no escaping it. For others, it's bills to be paid or jobs to be found. And then those fears, they roll around in our heads and in our lives until they mix together and in time are added to hopelessness, which makes for a combination called despair. We hit the bottom, we run out, we become desperate. There's panic. Panic on the inside that grips us and shakes us. And we say at Christmas time, we need an angel. We need an angel for now. But more than an angel, we need the angel's answers to our fears. And the angel's answers are the same this Christmas as they were that first Christmas. Words of comfort on the outside. For God still says, do not be afraid. And the promise of Jesus on the inside. Yes, Jesus comes inside of people today as really as he did to Mary 2 millennia ago. He comes inside and takes control and chases our fears away. In fact, that's what being a Christian is. Someone who invites Jesus in to live and to take charge. And so this Christmas Eve, hear the angel's message one more time. A message to us modern Marys with our modern fears. Do not be afraid. And invite Jesus inside. Let me tell you of someone who did just that. It was on a Christmas Eve, much like tonight. It was at a candlelight service, like this one. He prayed there a simple, private prayer of faith. Speaking to God and surrendering to God his sins and his fears, and inviting Jesus inside to be his Savior and the leader of his life. It was the Christmas that his fears were all chased away. And so may Mary's Christmas story, may his Christmas Eve story, become our story tonight. Do not be afraid, and invite Jesus inside.